To just make sure that the money that has been allocated to different institutions is being used properly, so in the interest of service delivery to our people. If it hasn't, what are the indications and the indicators that we as the portfolio committee can be able to use as we do our oversight to make sure that that particular institution really lives up to the ideal of being held accountable and being accountable in the interest of the people of the Republic. Having said that, I'm going to request on behalf of the chairperson of the board to introduce the team that you are with. I've forgotten the surname. I'm trying to think.
Andre Harrison.
Yeah. So thank you very much. To introduce the team that you brought here and then start to make a presentation. 30, 45 minutes presentation so that members can have ample time to can engage and interact with the presentation. To you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to make our presentation and to be here today. But first, let me offer apologies of our chairperson, Ms. Tembi Msibi. She was not able to make it. I think this is the first time she has. Yeah. So, but let me introduce then our team. On my right, I've got our Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Nkululeko Poya, and then Ms. Babalwa Mpendu supporting him, together with Dr. Cornell Malan, further on my right, and then Mr. Amin Ahmad, right at the end there. He's the chair of our audit committee, so if you have any problems with the way money is spent, he's the person who will respond to that. Honourable Chair, then I would like to hand over to Mr. Poya to do the presentation, and then we'll pick up those questions after that. Thank you very much.
thank you very much, Chairperson, Acting Chair. Thank you very much. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the Honourable Members that are present in the Portfolio Committee, to the DG and his team. To the rest of the colleagues that we have that are here in the room. I will try and stick to the time that the chairperson has allocated to us. So in explaining the presentation, we will talk to the audit outcomes. We'll try and make sure that we talk to the performance trends. The state of safety report, we've put it there. You will remember, chairperson, that there are two reports that are required for us to present at this particular committee. It's annual report and the state of safety report, and obviously we'll talk to the financial overview and the various challenges that we actually have. In terms of the audit outcomes, we've had no recurring findings, and I think that's something that is very important for us, that yes, we acknowledge we are not perfect, but we do make sure that year on year that there are no recurring findings. And that is something that we are showing in relation to the particular findings that are there, which means we are making sure that our controls are in place to ensure that those findings don't recur, and therefore we move forward as a particular organization. In terms of the predetermined objectives, in 15-16, we had one concern that came through from the AG, was the issue that related to objective 4, which related to how we explained the evidence that will come through as it relates to that particular performance around unqualified audit. We didn't mention the financial year, and therefore AG felt it was not smart enough in terms of the elements of identifying that particular predetermined objective in terms of performance information. Then, in terms of compliance, areas of concern that were there in terms of compliance with legislation, procurement is still an issue that was raised, but predominantly, as I've said, Chairperson, there's no recurring findings in relation to that. That must be taken in context that our budget has been increasing year on year, and therefore, as the budget increases, you do find new issues of concern because you've got a lot more budget that you have to expense, issues of training, issues of making sure that our people are aware in terms of how they spend the money of their particular regulator. Issues of compliance, monitoring for SAM regulations. We've taken note of that, and we will deal with those particular issues that have come up in terms of the Auditor General. The other issue around leadership, it related to that, what I talked about, the predetermined objective. AG found that we collectively as a board, we should have made sure that that annual performance plan was smart. And unfortunately, in the 15-16 or 16-17 financial year, we did augment or fix that as an organization, and therefore we don't expect that particular finding to reoccur. In terms of performance trends, we're showing there on slide 10 our overall performance. We're taking the committee chair through to see what happened since 11-12 and what has happened in 15-16. As you can see, there's been a trajectory where we've increased in terms of our performance. But most important for those targets is that they must be taken in context of the numbers of audits and inspections, which is the next slide. Slide 11, we're trying, if you look at 11-12, you can see that overall, collectively, we had 90 interventions as a regulator, where we achieved the 90% that I've shown on the 91. But if you look at gradually every year, in 15-16, we had 653 interventions, which shows you that we have done a lot more audits, a lot more investigations, and a lot more inspections in terms of the overall industry. And that gives us comfort that we know what is happening within the industry in terms of the of safety issues. Now, so that you, when you see the 90%, you can take it in context. That is more than 100% increase in terms of activities from 14-15 financial year to 15-16 financial year. Key achievements from our point of view is that we've developed regulations on human factors, the issue of railway reserves, security management, and obviously new proposed construction and operations regulations. As members will be aware, regulations are very important for us to ensure compliance on safety-related activities, and therefore when we have managed to produce regulations, We obviously appreciate that because it takes a lot of effort to get the industry to be consulted so that we have those regulations so that then they can be ready to be published by the department when they see it fit. The next item is the issue around level crossing committees. We've established those committees, and from our point of view, we feel those committees are an additional element of our safety compliance or monitoring regime. These are done with municipalities. So it's municipalities, level crossing committees, they throughout the provinces, in 9 provinces where municipalities and road authorities are part of those committees, and we discuss issues of level crossing, issues of common understanding around safety education and awareness, and where we can collaborate collectively in dealing with issues of road safety, plus what we call people strike by trains, or well known as railway reserves management. Technology Review Gazette is one of the achievements which was published and signed off by the Minister on the 15th of September 2015, and that allowed us, well, it continues to allow us to be able to ensure compliance with submission of new technologies. If operators want to procure any equipment, they have now, in law, have to make a submission to the regulator before they make that particular financial commitment. Otherwise, doing that without engaging the regulator is unlawful. And we've done a regulatory impact assessment, which allows us, and we'll share later on as we clarify, allowed us to be able to do what we call cost of risk, and we'll share when we get to the state of safety report. We've also established partnerships. It is impossible for us to be able to do the things we do without having partners. The Road Accident Fund is, in our view, one partner that we wish to share with the committee that we have, and working together on some of our incidents and level crossing activities. Premier Foods, it's a company, and obviously assists us with some of the corporate social investment, but also advertising in relation, so that we get some of the advertising for free without having to pay for it as a regulator. And obviously also the MOU for open source textbook with the basic education, so that we can make sure that we enhance our education and awareness activities. The next slide just tries to explain the operational environment with relation to the state of safety. Operational occurrences have decreased by 8%, and you can see safety-related incidents have decreased by 11%. We obviously can't say at this stage, through you, Chairperson, that those decreases will continue to be like that year on year. But what we're working towards is on share, because is to ensure, because we have our vision as zero occurrences, we must see a constant decrease on the areas of operational occurrences and safety-related occurrences, because that will take us to our ultimate goal of zero occurrences. And that's what we measure on an annual basis. We therefore, as a result, have looked at the top operational occurrence categories as they come out of the state of safety. Derailments during movement of rolling stock accounts for 10%. You've got collisions during movement of rolling stock account for 26%. That also includes collision with some a rock or anything on the line. So it's not mainline collision. It can be collision with any obstacles that are on the line, and therefore we record them as such. People-related occurrences in terms of platform train interchange, 15%, and we've got people struck by train, which is also during movement of rolling stock, which also accounts for 13%. And fires, I think this is something that is very important. Fires both either through people or what is called arson, or it could be electrical fault fires. That accounts for 12% of that particular pie chart in terms of those five categories. Provincial distribution, we've just shared in this presentation how provincially distributing the particular incident, and which of the provinces account for what type of occurrences in relation to that. The next slide, which is number of occurrences, it just shares, it's a graphical distribution or representation of the same data, just dealt with in terms of a pie chart, so that we're able to see where most of these incidents are taking place, as I've said in the previous, and we're able to see red is the people-related occurrences, and you can see that most of these incidents are the people-related occurrences, just at a glance so that we're able to see it as members. Sorry, just to explain, that's a national picture. Then the next one relates to the number of occurrences just for TFR, so that you're able to see. We've got segregation of the information so that we're able to know what is BRASA, what is TFR, and all of that is sitting in our state of safety report. Operational occurrences and fatalities. This is just showing what our fatalities have been from 2010-11. And what is our injuries and in terms of the spread. As you can see, we probably, as a, as the industry are sitting at about 450 in terms of fatalities, and that we would like to see a trend that is going down. But obviously, you can see it has not been able to increase, and that is something that we do encourage that operators. It's good that they're doing that, but you can see a drastic increase in injuries. And that was as a result of the two collisions, members, or three, that took place, which was Denver and we had Boise, if you remember, in that year. And that increased to 2,290 in terms of those particular collisions or injuries. Then security-related incidents in terms of the 65% as a result of theft of assets, cable theft and other assets that are stolen, which has a significant impact on the operational on operations in terms of those particular businesses. Vandalism is 21%, as you can see, in terms of train fires, and obviously PRASA is the worst affected in terms of that red example in terms of the particular pie chart. This is just a national picture to say representatively what in which province, which areas these particular security incidents are taking place. As you can see, if you follow the operation, it's mostly where PRASA is operating because they are dealing with people. So that's where most of the security incidents, as it relates to that, but they're also happening around, along the urban areas. Safety-related fatalities and injuries. This is just to be able to see what is happening with security fatalities and injuries. You can see there's a drop from 606 to 466 for injuries, and obviously the fatalities have stayed almost constant. Just on the top five areas that we focus on as a regulator, we, in terms of our activities, we've taken a view that out of the incidents, there's going to be five areas of the 80-20 rule, that we can't focus on everything, but what is it that we can direct operators towards? And we took five areas of focus: collisions, derailments, level crossing, people strike by trains, and platform train interface. And that graph is just representing what has happened with those particular categories in terms of them going down. But obviously, we've got 3 year data. It's too early to draw any statistical inference in terms of that particular data. We need about 8 years of data. But at least it's trying to show that it's something we're focusing on, so that we're able to, we believe, if we focus on these five areas, we will then be able to significantly reduce occurrences, which will obviously be moving towards our vision. This is just a further representation. I've taken just the two, which is people strike by trains and platform train interface. And as you can see, that further analysis we did on person strike by trains, we also look at the times which in which in a day these incidents are taking place. As you can see in that graph, that this take place mostly during peak, in the evening peak, and also in the morning peak. As you can see, though, that graph has spikes on the left-hand corner. It shows you that these incidents predominantly are not people that are, it's not suicide. Because internationally, suicide, when people want to kill themselves, they will wait for when it's quiet. They will not do it during peak, when most of the people are operating during that time. That's what happens statistically around the world. We haven't done, though, an analysis for the South African context, and I must say that. So I cannot say that it is or it is not suicide. We are busy now with studies to be able to make sure that we're able to. But around the world, research has shown that people don't kill themselves when it's actually a lot of movement of trains. They wait for quiet times of the particular day. Then we have platform train interface. As I've shared also, we've done an analysis. You can see it also happens during peak, which might be showing that there's challenges in relation to overcrowding. People don't know reliability of the operator service, which is PRASA, and therefore people will push and therefore create, and also it, as you can see in some of the stations where most of these incidents in terms of our data take place, it's where there's a lot of people using those particular train stations. and those train stations platforms have not been upgraded to the level to make sure that people are able to get on and get off the train as they would like to. Costs associated with operational occurrences, what we've also done is to take an analysis in terms of the cost. What are the costs to the operator for all of these incidents? As you can see, we've given for train fires, we've got theft and vandalism, collisions, level crossing accidents, and also derailments. As you can see there, 444 million rand for 15-16 financial year was due to derailments, which is an indicator for us that also, first of all, that maybe asset management in terms of maintenance is not being done to the level at which it's supposed to be done, and therefore if there's an increase in derailments or the cost thereof are increasing, then that's an area that we would believe in moving forward we'll expect operators to look at so that we're able to reduce those particular costs. But also what we're trying to do with this slide when we speak to operators is to be able to say safety is good business. Because if you're going to lose, these are direct costs. We're not talking about the indirect costs and opportunity costs that might be lost as a result of you not having the locomotive, because now your locomotive was in the development and therefore is no longer able to move the people or move the goods that you actually wanted to do. Operational cost distribution, this is just taking the same data and putting it in the map of South Africa to show which areas in South Africa are giving you what type of data, what type of cost out of those particular areas, which is very important when you're having a conversation with the operator. Because as you can see, depending who the operator is that the blue is mostly tier 5. As you can see, the fires, which is the other color, is mostly PRASA. And because of where it takes place, it's Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Durban. That's where PRASA is making or is doing its operations. And that's the type of information that we're talking about. PRASA costs, I've just shared another slide, which gives you an indication of PRASA costs, Gauteng, Eastern Cape, KZN, and Western Cape. As you can see, what their overall costs are as PRASA in relation to those particular regions. Then we've taken TFR costs just to give you an indication of their costs, and this is the data that they will have based on the information they've submitted to the regulator. What we've also done is to be able to take those costs and depict them in relation to gross value add of the passengers in a particular city, so that we're able to look at the risks associated, so that we're able to somehow normalize this data so that we're able to work with it and know which areas of focus or operators should focus on as a suggestion when they're dealing with the safety management system. Freight costs, the same information. We've then looked at the freight costs and obviously total occurrences and the incident cost per ton transported versus obviously the value of the particular freight that is being transported. And those bubbles are depicting that in relation to, and obviously we're showing the Natal line, the Maputo, the Manganese, and in some of the corridors that you actually have. And that's what we're showing in terms of those particular bubbles. In the next segment of the presentation, we're trying to show what exactly is the RSR interventions that we're putting forward. I think I've shared earlier that in 15-16 we had 653 interventions that we put forward, and what do we gather as information from those interventions? That for investigations, we've been able to gather that some of the root causes for the incident is 23% of them as it relates to payway, which is the infrastructure, the permanent way. 60% of those incidents are the result of human factor. That already, Chairperson, gives you an indication of where we should focus on over the next 3 to 5 years. The issue of human behavior, human factor as we call it, is an important element of, if we can eliminate those mistakes from people, our railway system will be a lot safer. That's what comes out from our investigation. Our outcomes of our audits and inspections in terms of how compliant are the operators? That's the information that I'm showing there, based on some of the standards that we actually have. And as you can see that for non-conformative or non-compliances, we've got 4%, but also 81% is just being non-conformative. Now, improvement directives or prohibition directive, which is the 13 and 2%, that's when people have really not complied with something that is quite serious, and therefore it needs to be corrected. 13% were improvement directives out of those audits, and 2% of those audits resulted in prohibition directives. In other words, us stopping trains in that particular line because we felt it was so unsafe that we could not allow people to continue with their operations. I think this is probably something we want in depicting future presentations for us. This is just taken out of RSSB. RSSB is a UK-based organization for standards, which does standards for overall organization within the UK in terms of their law, and it depicts how UK is performing against other countries around the world. Now, obviously, we don't have that data, but this is obviously some of the things we can show. How are we faring or how are we performing from a safety perspective against other SADC countries, but also other countries around the world that have the data that we can compare with. HR overview, that just shows where our offices are in terms of the number of people. The next slide just depicts the issue of vacancy rate, but I just want to correct that 15-16 is not to correct it, it is correct. It is based on 487 staff complement, but the board in 16-17, we have agreed that we're going to increase productivity of people, and therefore that number of 487 will drop to less than 300 in terms of staff complement, while we'll be able to achieve the same by making sure that people are trained, we improve our systems and processes, and we believe we'll be able to achieve the same amount of results with a number of people of less than 300. So when you look at that 64% vacancy rate, it looks a lot, but I think next time we meet with this committee in 16-17, we'll be able to share you with the revised organogram that we actually are agreeing with as a board. The next slide deals with just the demographics or how RSR is doing in terms of employment equity and in terms of the equity targets. That's the next slide. We've got 0.5% progress made against 15-16 targets in terms of disability. In terms of HR, the total in terms of women, male, in terms of the different levels of the organization, that's depicted in that particular slide in terms of what our target is and where we are in terms of the particular target at top management, senior management, and other areas in the business. The overall business as a whole has got almost a 50-50 split between men and women out of 140 for this report, but we've got now 193 people. The financial overview, Chair, I think as is depicted in our annual report, we've managed to collect in terms of our financial overview all of the revenue or most of the revenue that we actually had planned as an organization. We did get assisted by the issue of the Gazette that the Minister published on the 15th of September 2015 for technology reviews, which is the 11 million that we actually see at the top, at the bottom right. The next overview then shows the total in terms of what we had expenditure versus revenue. We've collected 219 million in relation to revenue. In terms of BE spent, we have been able to spend on BE mainly as a percentage in terms of our target for 15. You can see 14-15 in terms of our BE expenditure, but also we've been focusing a lot more on women expenditure, and you can see we've grown that to 15.4% versus the 9.7% that we had the year before. And we've now started to also look at indication around youth, what are we spending around youth in terms of that being spent. Revenue projection. I think as you could see, we've actually shared in 16-17 moving forward. These are the targets in terms of the different revenue streams that we think we can collect as an organization. I think what is most important for the committee to note is that the technology review as a revenue stream is going to deplete. That will definitely go down because as PRASA and Transnet are busy with the manufacturing phase of their business, our involvement, once those are in operation, gets to be depleted. We get to engage at procurement and maybe very early in the manufacturing process. And therefore, that revenue stream will deplete, and we obviously have strategies as an organization to see how we can keep the organization going with those particular revenues. See, challenges that we've had is safety critical grades. We've had delays in regulation that has created a bit of a challenge with us achieving one of our targets in 15-16, which is safety critical grades, and the issue of engagement with industry. And we've had delays, I think that's... And then the next one is around our interventions. I am getting to the end, Chairperson. Another two slides. Technical skills development. One of the things that we're doing moving forward, we have, I think it's what I've mentioned earlier, to say over the last 5 years, we probably have employed more people, and therefore what we're doing now is to upskill those people that we have and less about bringing people in, except maybe in some of the technical areas that we still need to employ people. So we're working with some of our partners from Sweden. We've also developed a specific railway training courses. One of them is for medical practitioners, doctors, so that they can understand health and safety issues in terms of rail and the requirements of the RSR human factors requirements in terms of the standard, but also the railway safety inspector qualification. Now, this is a qualification that we as a regulator have developed, and we will have it ready by end of March next year. And the idea is that we then are able to ensure that capacity that we expect from operators is available and operators can do the course themselves, so that we know that their competency level for some of the people that are working on safety critical areas, maybe in the risk department that are engaging with the regulator, that at least the sum, and this is the NQF level 6. So our intention is that if people have an interest, they can do that course, and that course will be ready. And it's done with a CTO. The next one is then planned interventions. We are able to do that cost share because one of the things we'll also be doing is putting ourselves as an accredited professional body, which means we can provide training and quality assurance and training service providers within the industry so that the quality of training that is provided is of the level that will allow us to ensure that we know when people have gone through the training that their competency levels are at the right level. We're also partnering with the University of Pretoria, Witwatersrand, Stellenbosch, and obviously MTI and Denver University, which are two international universities, because our intention is to make sure, moving forward, that we create capacity that is available within the universities or the training sector so that we're able to guide operators when there is a challenge of competencies in certain level, so that they can be trained in those particular areas. We also have partnerships with regulators. The Swiss Federal Office, which is in Switzerland, we have a partnership with them, but also we're working on a partnership with the Office of Road and Rail, which is a UK-based regulator. So that some of the things, intention that we have, Chairperson, is that there's some of the assessments in terms of audit that would want an external body to come and do, which means then it becomes independent. Then there can be no argument that is made that we are biased as a regulator at a particular point in time, which will be done on an annual basis, maybe with some of the major operators, but it allows us to make sure that there's an independent person who has checked on our information so that biasness in any way is removed from the discussion and the debate when it comes to our activities. Thank you very much, Shepherd.
Thank you very much, Mr. Poya. Honorable members, the presentation has been made very elaborate. The Honorable Member Maswanganyi at some stages was saying when you do your work with passion, that's what you will always get from Mr. Poya. So very, very elaborate. Honorable members, there we are. Can we take it? I'm just very interested in you being a service provider in terms of qualifications and the training. As to how you're going to do that, will they go to universities and come and do practicals with yourself? What exactly will be happening? It's very, very interesting. Is it a degree? Is it a diploma? The qualification that will be done? It's to me one of those things which I think are very, very, very. We're very keen to want to hear. When is it starting? You said the curriculum will be done by next year March. When do you anticipate to start your training program? Honorable members, going. Honorable Ramatlakana, Honorable Sibande, Honorable Khadebe.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. It was a good choice to do this one after lunch. Because it keeps us on our feet.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I think the good work has been reported, but I just want to check the AG in his report. The AG is a bit worried that some regression that he noticed this particular year. Now, I just want to find out from you with that, what is it that you're putting in place to address that particular concern? Because I think in terms of it has a red flag that it's identified. The other quick one is the issue of competencies. The competencies in terms of staff competencies. There's some concern around that. What is it that you're doing in terms of addressing that particular aspect? And if you are saying that you're going to do the staff reduction from the 487 to something somewhere down. I'm not sure, you haven't actually explained that what the staff issue that I was referring to in terms of the supply chain issues, that I just be specific about that. Now, if you were going to reduce the numbers and you will be adding some of your functions, how are you going to be able to make do with the numbers that you're going to have? Is the numbers was not necessarily informed by the forward futuristically looking in terms of what you're going to be able to get, or is it linked to ability in terms of raising resource complement to the staff to address the issue of the staff complement? So the last one really is some red flag or yellow flag around the issue about the whole thing about financials and financial performance, that particular plan to address that particular aspect. I think it has been noted by the AG that there is that concern. Maybe you would, in your response, maybe just reassure the committee in terms of that, because from where I'm sitting, I'm particularly worried if you're going backwards and not forward in terms of that particular regression. The whole thing about the measurability and target story. That it's always an issue or moving target. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleague nearly covers me the issue of regression, which was identified by the AG. But also, I wanted to make a rider on specific about the issue which you raise yourself about the procurements. That has been an issue. But what are you doing in order to address that? What do you have in place? And also, I agree, you nearly covered me when you were talking about in terms of the investigations and findings. You raise a lot of things in terms of lack of supervision, negligence, lack of communication, infrastructure conditions, but what do you have in place in order to address the thing which you have already identified? Because it's very much easier, unlike a person who didn't spoke in Dongaibun, where now you do have evidence that here are the challenges. So what do you do? And also, what is worrying me the most then? The issue of management that doesn't adhere to the requirements of the FMPPI. That is serious. Because that is a measuring a yardstick or a directive which you're supposed to take in order to minimize some of the challenges. And also, Chairperson, I was touched when you raised the issue of conditions, about the issue of investigation, about the issue of human nature, that there are 60% contributing to challenges. But, you see, Chairperson, from my legal experience, all right, before that, let me ask, which is the most affected province? Because so that at the end, maybe we can have an amicable approach to get a remedy to minimize those particular challenges. And also, the issue which was raised by a treasurer regulation about the issue of you don't take quotations. They've requested that you must continuously take quotations when they're doing your things. Because I think that is part of the thing which you're experiencing the regression. That you are right. And of course, you quite, you know, when I was checking somewhere, a lot of things you met your target. But some of the things which are not yet addressed, I think they pose a challenge. That you do something, do more in order to address those things. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me leave it there.
Thank you, Chair.
Right.
I'll ride on, Chair. No. No, Chair, but you must indeed acknowledge the performance of the RSR. You see, most importantly, you know, the policy implementation that they made promise to us last year, I can see that they are appearing here. Mm-hmm. And also they are responding towards also what the Attorney General has, you know, dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And we must be able to acknowledge that when you also, with the kind of policies that you want us to assist you with, you come and front and forward and give you an assistance to do so. You put it, you know, system at place. The technology review that is conducted by the 15th of September, I think that place, it really tells that you signed MOUs, basic education with the road accident fund. It really tells that at least there's a, you listen to the portfolio committee when it speaks. must be able to acknowledge and appreciate such kind of strife, because those are the things that will make you be seen, you know, being developmental in terms of your systems. But I need to just to get a clarity. When you talk about, on your slide 26, you spoke about the issues of the challenges in terms of the platform training interface. That there are other platforms that are still not yet being completed and fixed by BRASA. If you can be able to assist us in informing us what is happening, what is the delay, but what is the time period that probably BRASA is saying is going to respond to us this one? Because we are afraid that if they don't fix up these things, you're going to close them down, because you also want to threaten them to close them down. So we know that you promise and you implement your policies. So, you know, we must be able also to support you as a portfolio committee to ensure that pressurize BRASA to implement their promises. The other aspect is the issue of the human factor. I think Orasman has just mentioned it, and must be able to find amicable solution in ensuring that at least maybe in ensuring maybe the along the implementation of the policies that we've just introduced here, we'll be able to see changes in terms of human behavior change, and the response probably will be able to see, so that we can be able to see changes of these fatalities within the humankind. Lastly, let me just appreciate that at least there's about the 1.6% of youth empowerment, but I'm not happy, you know. 1.6 within the youth, we are facing very serious challenge here within this youth aspect. You know, it will be worse now because the fees must fall, it's increasing, and you must expect that young people will want to have employment, others want to create opportunities. You must just expand that spectrum so that at least there's a larger accommodative of young people, so that at least will address one of the other challenges that the government is facing. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Harrison, through you, questions will be responded to.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think the detail of the question certainly Mr. Poyer will deal with. He's got the detail on at his fingertips. But just a comment from my side. As the board, we have been very satisfied with the management interventions. Yes, we note the AG's comments, but I think those comments have to be taken into context. The organization has grown, if you look at the graphs, in terms of the number of investigations, you look at the finances, the growth. Now, with growth comes pain. We know that. And as the CEO pointed out, we haven't repeated any findings.
Sure.
So we learn, as an organization, we learn from our mistakes. And I think that's the perspective I'd like to put on the answers that are going to be given by Mr. Poyer. We have in place MQS, which is a quality management system that in fact is going to drive improvement in terms of how we run the business. It's at an operational level, but as a board, we're fully supportive of it. So I think that while we might see a few issues with someone which we're calling regression, I wouldn't like to sit in that context. I would like to see this as growing pains, which means we're actually moving forward. So if I could leave it there and hand over to Mr. Poyer then to deal with the detail. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Through you, Chair, thank you very much. Without going into, and I think maybe the context on some of the findings that the AG found, one of the things related to our employees which were having businesses outside of the RSR, In other words, with other government entities. Now, obviously, AG found that we found us wanting, but it was the first time they picked up that. And obviously, we don't have access to the same information and systems that AG has. We can't go to the CIPRO database. We rely on what people tell us. So if you sign the SPD4 form and you say, we take your word for it, so it becomes very difficult. But when we do, and I think this is now the most important, when AG finds such, we take action. And we have taken action. In actual fact, AG did find that one of our people in supply chain did not declare their business interest. And we've taken action against that. And in the response that we gave as management to the board, and the board was appraised of that, was that we take action. So that does happen. When we do find, so obviously such, we are putting systems in place through you, Chair, to be able to prevent that in future. Now that we know, we have improved our system internally to be able to see how do we make sure that that area of internal control is improved so that we're able to make sure that as an organization. What I think is important as well to note is that there was no emphasis of matter. And I think otherwise we're going to lose, in some of the findings, we're going to lose the essence of these. There might have been 14 findings based from last year, but there is not even one which was an emphasis of matter. So I think that's something that is very important to note that we need to be clear about. And I'm sure maybe the ARC chair might want to add moving forward. But I think that's something that needs to be noted. We take context. We appreciate, obviously, that we're a growing organization. We appreciate that we will make mistakes, and mistakes are made. But we make sure that in that process that we don't repeat findings, but also people learn from the mistakes that they've made so that we move forward as an organization, and that's the principle that we take. Around the issue of competencies of staff, yes, it is something that is true. As the organization was growing and we rapidly grew over a space of, let's say, 2 years, from 107 million rand to about 219 million rand in terms of revenue. Now, with the same people that we used to doing things in a particular manner, they are procurement grew as well. Now, one of the things that we've done, I think, as the chairperson, acting chairperson of the board is saying, we've got a management quality system, MQS. Now, if implemented properly, that system can increase productivity to more than 40%. Now, we are working on that and increasing training opportunities for our people. We've done competency assessments for all the senior management staff of the organization. All of them have been competency assessed. We've got a training plan that we put together, and we will stick to that training plan. Yes, I think it is important to note that there are no quick wins. In my view, I think there are no quick wins in life. It can be easy for us to go and buy a skill, bring it in, we fix everything, but we learn in that process. Mm-hmm. And sustainability of that, because whoever you bring from outside who comes in, one of the challenges that you will have is that they might as quickly leave, and therefore sustainability of that intervention. We do bring people in to augment our current capacity that we have. Issue of CFO, I think we can share that. I think you've seen in our report that we obviously are busy with acquiring or having a CFO with the right competencies, so that they're able to take the organization forward. And there's a process that the board is involved in, and we will get there. And we are very clear as a board what type of competencies we want from that CFO to support the business moving forward in terms of our strategy. The issue of, obviously, staff reduction, it's a combination of change in strategy, but also understanding that the issue of people management is not a 1+1 equation. If you have a person, each year that person must produce more and more, because technically they are moving back. So you need, if you have people, you can't just add 1+1, because at some point you're going to have less people doing the work. Some might let these new ones or the ones that are more averse to change do all the work, and they will sit back, and they will be the resistant group. So numbers on their own, adding numbers on their own, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to perform as an organization. And I think we've learned that, and we are trying to keep our team with the necessary skill sets, improve them, multi-skill them when necessary, send them, and most of the people we have at RSR are actually, I think there's about more than 20 people that have got their masters, and about 5 or 6 of them have registered for their PhDs. And we're encouraging them. We're encouraging them because we believe that if you educate yourself, you will ultimately be able to deal with some of the challenges that are being identified.
Mm. Chair, if I may, people, we've been looking at this. I've heard the comments about staff reduction. There's actually no staff reduction. In fact, we'll be increasing the number of staff. But it's the projected numbers that we're no longer going to need. There's no staff reduction. It's just our projection is being reduced. So no people will be asked to leave the organization. It's simply we will be employing fewer people than we originally intended because of productivity, training, skilling, and as a board, that's our fiduciary responsibility to see that the resources are used effectively. Thank you.
Then the other issue, I think it related to the issue of platform train interface. Yes, Honorable Khadebe, there is a challenge. And one of the challenges that we're having is that there's no alignment between the new rolling stock program and the infrastructure program from BRASA, because platform train interface is a BRASA incident. So stations, the only organization that allows people to get on and off in their stations is BRASA. And it is trying to, without obviously delaying the program of introduction of new trains, to try and find a way to bring these two programs closer. And that is one of our activities that we are working on with BRASA. There's a bit of a misalignment from a system level where their trains and where they want to plan their trains and where they've appointed contracts for where they're doing station improvements. Now, obviously, infrastructure takes a long time to build, and that's one of the challenges that you would have. So we would see probably this problem of platform train interface for many, many, well, let's say for another 3 to 5 years until they miss the alignment is brought in, but also, as we've shared, one of the things is that it's an issue of the number of train sets you have. If every year your train sets are reducing, then there's more overcrowding, then there's more pushing when people get there, and there's less reliability of your service. And therefore, the platform train interface incidents increase. But we are focusing on those areas as an organization to see where we should focus our attention with BRASA, working together, so that we're able to achieve that particular reduction and get that alignment working better in terms of their program. Around issues of youth development, yes, you are correct. We do acknowledge that it's not good enough. And I think we are the first ones to acknowledge that it is definitely not good enough. And one of the things that we are working on, obviously with DOT, is around strategies on how we can deal with the issues of youth. We don't have all the answers, but we've got a team that is working with the youth desk and the youth people working in DOT to find strategies that will be able for us to increase that level of engagement of some of those. And what is then the best way to be able to deal with that? One of the things I think what has been shared is, or question, sorry, from the chairperson, is this training that we're talking about. What is it? It is at an NQF level 6, which is a diploma level. So NQF level 6 is equivalent to what we know as a diploma. And our intention is that we place it at that level, this particular course, so that school leavers that want to choose careers can then choose that course as long as you've got matric, maths, I think it's maths and science, you would be able to get into that particular training. The training will be available from the 1st of April next year. We have a meeting with TITA so that we can look at funding strategies for those people that might not have the money to be able to fund themselves through that particular program, so that we're able to then make sure that there's something that is done. But the intention for that is also to make sure that companies are able to upskill some of the safety people within their organization that are dealing with rail, to send them in those particular courses, especially if you've got many, many years of experience, 10, and we allow you to be able to get in there. What we are doing, Chair, just to maybe share, what then happens with people that have a degree? We're working currently with, as part of our program and discussions with FOT, there's a university in Switzerland that has a postgraduate on what you call electronic interlocking. Now, PRASA is putting an electronic interlocking system. There is no current university in South Africa that gives that. So technically meaning that by the time PRASA has implemented their electronic signaling system, except for the people that would have been trained by Siemens or Bombardier, you won't have a steady flow of people with those competences, because mechanical interlocking systems will be out of the picture. We'll be now dealing with electronic interlocking. And we are looking forward to say, once that happens, we need to then upskill your signaling technicians so that they're able to have the competency levels to be able to do what is expected and manage those activities in a safe manner. So training as a whole from a regulator perspective is an area in our view that we're focusing on, and that's why we talk about being a professional board. Now, being a professional body that is registered allows us to do certain things. We become like ECSA, the Engineering Council of South Africa. Then there's a lot of flexibility in terms of what we're able to do. We're able to have courses that are accredited that can be regulator courses and sign off in terms of certificates. We're able to also verify those particular or service providers that are providing training in support of their certificates that are there in TITA, so that we make sure that the competency levels are upskilled. And we have an MOU, I think, members, I think I've shared this before, with TITA, where we work in collaboration with TITA when we're dealing with some of these things. So that we also serve in the rail chamber within TITA. We are represented there, so that we make sure that the skill sets or the training capabilities or even the curriculum itself has the right ingredients for to make sure that we're able to achieve the overall performance that we actually require from operators when those people have got those particular skill set. Thank you very much. I don't know if the chairperson of ARC wants to add something.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. As the Audit and Risk Committee of the RSR, we constantly, on a quarterly basis at the very least, monitor various aspects of the RSR. We look at the RSR's spend patterns against budgets, look at whether the RSR is on track to spend as they have projected and they budgeted. We look at their performance reports on a quarterly basis and look at whether there's a risk that the RSR would not meet its performances. We look at the reports of internal audit, and internal audit has done up to about 18 internal audit reports, and the findings of internal audit are collated by management, and on a quarterly basis, the Audit and Risk Committee would look at whether management is conforming and fulfilling the recommendations as per the agreed timelines, and whether they are systemically addressing the issues. An important question is we look at systemic addressal of the control weaknesses that have been identified and not a superficial or symptomatic addressal of that. We'll also look at the AG's report and mediate, if needed be, between management and the AG in terms of some of the findings. But after the findings have been agreed upon, Madam Chair, we would then request management to come up with an action plan, which we look at and we monitor on a quarterly basis. And perhaps with the audit committee's assistance, part of the reason why there's been no repeat findings is that the management and the RSR has been very good at systemically addressing the issues. And we've also looked at enterprise and enterprise risk management and to look at whether the RSR, against their strategic objectives, do their risk registers align to the strategic objectives, and is there sufficient risk mitigating measures in place and controls in place. And that's where internal audit will then come and test those controls. So as the committee, we're very happy with management, and the management has taken to their task with vigor and with passion, and there will always be control lapses and control deficiencies that would come about. And as the audit committee, via internal audit or via an external audit process, when these issues do arise, we will ask the relevant questions and monitor management's commitments towards addressing these control deficiencies. So we don't have any material concerns about the system of control, neither do we have any material concerns about the performances. There are some risks and challenges that the CEO has very eloquently mentioned, and we are abreast and aware of those. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Just to follow up on the responses, the acting chair indicate that there is a pain of a growing organization. So they're learning from that. Yeah, I want to take that. And the CEO also says growing organization from one something million to double the amount, close to double amount, and the challenges grow. I'll take that, but obviously that's a management issue. You've got to plan for a growing organization. You can't make it an excuse that the growth is outpacing the thinking of management and the planning. You were caught by surprise, but overnight, this organization grew without you actually making growth. So I just want to make that point, that I don't think you're arguing that point, but I'm hearing that as I'm listening to you. But, well, look, let's not split hair, but I don't think that's the response. I won't necessarily want to take that one that way. And I'm raising that because we don't like this thing of going backwards. You disagree with the issue of regression. You say it's a pain. Yeah, well, that's a terminology. It's a new one. But let's stick to the one that we know better, that we have been presented with. Now, just two things. The Auditor General is concerned about the arrow is pointing upwards insofar as a fruitless, wasteful and fruitless expenditure in terms of the growth from the previous year to this year. Perhaps your comment on that. And the last part is that the last time we had some conversation around the table, there was a bit of a disagreement. I don't like to call it a dispute. There was a bit of a disagreement, and you were waiting for a proper response from PRASA with respect to the locals. I think there was an issue that was incomplete, and you were waiting for an answer with respect to that, including the plan and maintenance plan. Now, as we were talking about your focus work, PRASA being one of the key, I wonder whether that was actually received at the end, or it's still a matter that is mute, is standing there, it's not necessarily, nobody's doing anything with it. Those are the two follow-up questions, Chair.
Any other question? Nothing? Mr. Poy?
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think Honorable Matlakane, we know. We are the type of management that is able to see around the corner.
So we do acknowledge that we might disagree with the AG in terminology. We're not always going to agree with what is the general, but we do acknowledge that there are no matters of emphasis. And I think we take that point, and we do note that we'll do better next time. I think the issue around PRASA or some of the issues around safety that relate to non-compliances, we continue to have a lot of engagement. I think members will remember last year we issued PRASA with a permit, but the permit had very strict conditions. Which that permit is coming up for renewal now, end of October. So there are engagements that are taking place at the moment around ensuring that those non-compliances or those conditions of permit are met. And failure to comply with those conditions would obviously be a serious net. And it is something that PRASA is well aware of. We've shared with them the condition. One of the conditions relates to what you call human factors. You remember we said 60% of the incident related to human factors, and our issue was the issue of vacancies at safety critical levels, because you can't run a system with vacancies at safety critical levels, and that's one of the conditions. Now, obviously, we've been working with them, having a lot of meetings around that, plus the issue of, you will remember for the poisons incident, there was the issue that related to signaling, and we produced a signaling report, and they have managed to employ the right companies to be able to make sure that they do the work that we had raised after the poison signaling issue. So there has been work. As I'm sitting now, the team is working on what you call the safety management system. They've been requested to make submissions, and there is a meeting taking place this coming Friday with the PRASA executives so that we can get a report. But as it stands at the moment, there are areas of concern, and I think I must share that there are areas of concern. One area of concern, and we've shared this with PRASA, is the Shosholoza mail business. It is a serious area of concern for us. We've done investigations. We have, but obviously we're still awaiting responses from them on how they're going to deal with those non-compliances within that particular business unit. And obviously our conditions are there. We see how they've managed to meet those particular conditions, and they've been responsive. And I must say this through you, Chair, that they have been responsive to some of our information in relation to that, and we do expect them to respond favorably in terms of the information that we require from them, so that we don't have a challenge of their permit not being renewed by the 31st of October.
There you are, Honourable Members. Are there other issues that need to be raised? Honourable Ramachaka.
Madam Chair, the one question that CEO did not respond to is this concern about fruitless and wasteful expenditure that is growing. But I read that perhaps when he said they've taken note of that, he was responding in a shorthand to that particular question. Chair, I think the one thing that I just want to check while you are here, the environment security of PRASA, in terms of you don't necessarily make comments around that, insofar as the, call it, for lack of a better term, call it a a depot security. You talked about security. They spoke about security earlier, and they said they've got a huge cost on security. But I just want to check with you in terms of your own work that you do in terms of that particular, if you have. One of the things that concerns me all the time is the environment security, where you have the depot or places that is not covered, that is not, that's accessibility, can come in from any part. I mean, we were sometimes in Salt River, you know, you know the Salt River area. You can come in there, you can walk in there, you can, because of the security environment aspect. So the question really is that whether you do share that kind of concerns around that, which deals with the stock, either the rolling stock or stuff like that.
If I may, yes, through you, Chairperson. All security incidents in terms of the regulation must be reported to the regulator, even if they happen within a depot area. So they will be shared with that, with us, and obviously we'll record them, and we do put them in the state of safety report in terms of those particular security incidents. What I think is obviously of concern to us from this seem, and I suppose that's why we thought it proper that we put together a security regulation. You will remember through your chair that we didn't have that. And that is sitting at the moment with DOT, and I'm sure it will be published very soon. That will then give us a little bit more leeway to ensure compliance with security issues. Because I think there's what we found throughout the industry, there's a little of non-compliance with the security regulations that are in place throughout the country. And I think ours is not to duplicate that. It's just to say there is a security agency that is in place. We are working now to put together an MOU with the security agency, because we don't want to create capacity ourselves, but whoever operates within the rail space must comply with the security requirements that are put out there. And those, we've looked at them, they're quite extensive. And I think if people comply with that, they will, some of the security challenges that they're having would be, one of the things that is expected is that you do security clearances for the security guards, which we do find is not being done. And therefore, when theft takes place, it might be, I'm not saying it is, it might be as a result of those people because the security clearances were not done. So that's how we are working on the security issue without taking over the activities, because I think with the Rapid Rail Police, you will appreciate that they come in as an afterthought when an incident has taken place. And we're trying to find a way through the regulation to get the operators to comply. We don't have those tools at the moment, but we're trying to, we do report on them, and we're trying to get them to be able to comply in relation to that. I think just on the irregular expenditure, there is a challenge.
Can we have it recorded?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, ma'am. On the, I think I did mention that on the irregular expenditure, you will note that yes, it has increased. And I think it is mentioned in the Auditor General, and we've shared with the Audit Committee on exactly what was the technicality. And I think it's important that we put this on record. The triple PFA regulations, they say you have to do 80-20 and a 90-10. Now, as best practice, when in doubt, what do you do? When in doubt, because the one is 1 million, the other one is above 1 million, the other one is less than 1 million. When in doubt, normally best practice says you fall on the 90-10. Because technically, you're not prejudicing anyone. Because you're taking 10% now for B instead of 20% for PE. That's what we did as an advert. When it came back, the advert, we then ended up with submissions that are less than a million. When our advert had went out for a million, for more than a million, a 90-10. Obviously, through our BAC, they saw it proper, the people that were sitting in the BAC, that they're going to do the processing of that as a 90-10, because that's what the advert said, instead of changing it to 80-20. which was not in the advert. Obviously, there was AG. We did agree, by the way, with AG that it is correct. It is what it is. I just wanted to give context so that these are two, so that it's understood what exactly these that have made such a significant increase in relation to that. We've taken note of them, and we are focusing, I think, on some of our supply chain issues to upskill them and make sure that they're able to make the right judgment call when it comes to these particular areas in relation to that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. I think we've come to the end of the day. Let me thank the Board of RSR, CEO and the functionaries in RSR, acting DG. We're not getting such a lapel tomorrow. Such a lapel. Your team. See you tomorrow. But we're very elated that there is somewhere you're starting to show PRASA the way. Because what becomes very important is that safety of our people, it doesn't matter where they find themselves, whether it's by air, by rail, by road, it's a very critical thing that you should always aspire to achieve zero. Like in health, we are saying zero infections, zero everything. These are the things that we aspire to have also on in terms of transport. Colleagues, I think work has just begun. We will, tomorrow we're continuing, it's going to be longer tomorrow because we've got several of the parastatals. We want to finish them tomorrow if it comes to a push, so that we can be able to start looking into the bigger picture. We're still owing to legislation that must serve in Parliament. So that's why we have to deal with the BRRR and be done with. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.